Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Jeff Joniak, the voice of your Chicago Bears.
Back to throw. Blitz is on. Picked up Dalton, leaving the pocket. He's got room to run. 25 to the 20 and stumbles forward. Is he close to or at the first down? Pickup of 9. 4 defenders back. 7 at the line of scrimmage. They back up with 2. They throw left. It is caught inside the 5. A catch made. Damir Bird for a first down and goal for the Bears at the 4-yard line of Detroit. Simple throw, simple catch. Damir Bird moves the sticks. Snap, placement, kick by Cairo Santos. It is up. It is good for the win. Get your feast on, Bears fans. Thanksgiving, turkey, and the fixings will never taste any better. Bears get the win. 16-14 on the swing of the right leg of Cairo Santos. Capping the longest Bears scoring drive this season, an 18-play journey covering 69 yards in 8 minutes and 30 seconds for the winning points, believe it or not, right on their season average of 16 grueling points to end a 5-game skid. Bears win, fade to black from Detroit.
Jeff Joniak, you are ridiculous.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 to the Score. Always a joy to talk to our friend Jeff Joniak. And he joins us on the guest hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Jeff, good morning. How are you, sir?
Fantastic. Never was more exuberant about 16 points.
Well, that was difficult. You're right. Grueling was the word. And they did win the game. And frankly, I thought the highlight, and this is, you know, it's going to sound cynical, but they did not give their opponent enough time to march down the field and kick a field goal, get a touchdown, whatever has happened in the couple previous games, right? Against Baltimore, against the Steelers. So that was one of the – I mean, eating up that 8:30 was huge.
No, that was special. That was a special drive, and it was patience. And I give Andy Dalton a ton of credit, along with Bill Lazor, calling those plays. The two of them did a great job on that final drive, and that game was about Andy Dalton, frankly. It really was. It was Andy Dalton talking to the team, Andy Dalton being a pro, Andy Dalton thriving in his opportunity that he thought he would be having more of those in 2021. Didn't work out that way for him, but his attitude has been outstanding. You better believe he's burned up deep down inside, but he's not the type of guy to show it that way. He channels it in different ways, and he's been a really help, real big help to that team in ways that we'll probably never know.
It sounds like he'll be starting on Sunday, Jeff. I'd be really surprised if Justin Fields goes this week without having practice with the number ones. And so if you get Andy Dalton, what are you going to see against this Cardinal defense, which is very good against the pass, and is fourth in the league in scoring defense?
Well, you know, they are in 20 categories on defense, which is probably the underrated story here, and 19 categories, the categories I monitor for offensive and defensive statistics, they're in the top 10. And in many of those, they're in the top 5. This is a balanced team. And the first thought is, okay, Andy Dalton is very good getting rid of the football quick. If they're going to go that route and have it be long handoffs, I'm fine with that. If you want another 18-play drive a couple times in that game to eat 8.5 minutes a clock, I'm down with that too. Because it's tough to score on these guys. And here's that haunting number again, the number 16. In their six road wins, that's what the defense has given up for Arizona, 16 points a game. So you're not getting in a shootout with these guys. They like to start real fast. They've averaged 15 points or more, I guess, on average in the first half of games. So they get to you quick. They do like to control the clock as well. So you kind of have to wrestle that time of possession thing, be efficient, but you gotta get touchdowns. You've got 17 offensive touchdowns in 11 games and two return touchdowns from Roquan Smith and DHC on special teams. So, you know, it's not leaning in your favor to score touchdowns, but if you're going to control the clock, and they have to end in points. And the other thing is stunning, really. Arizona has 19 fumbles this season. That's the most in the NFL. 19.
Wow.
But they've only turned it over three times of those 19. So if it's on the ground, if their mesh point on read option is not as smooth as it needs to be, take advantage of every single opportunity. This is a doggone good football team, Arizona, rolling in here.
Boy, and they're getting better. I mean, they you know, you're going to face them coming off a bye with Kyler Murray back, with DeAndre Hopkins back, with a couple of offensive linemen that have been out of the in and out. Looks like they're going to play. I know there's some game time decisions involved, but it's the last thing you need is them to improve, and it's just the nature of the animal. Now, they haven't played the greatest schedule, people say, so here's hoping that they're a bit of a paper tiger, but those numbers are very intimidating.
Right, yeah, I still look at the, I know Seattle's really struggling, but you know, San Francisco's wound it up. That conference, division is very, very difficult. It's a tough one. Where you're going on the road and you know, the different time zones. Arizona's not as egregious, obviously, as San Francisco or Seattle's time zone turning. But this team is, again, it's a third year of a coach, third year with his quarterback, third year with his defensive coordinator. Nothing's really changed. They're adding to their repertoire. They love the blitz. They love the pressure. You know where they're weak? The weakest thing is their run defense. So mm-hmm. I think there is opportunities here to get the ground game back up and percolating. Last 2 weeks, you know, the average yards per carry is down. Teams waiting on it, challenging to throw against them. So I'm certain that's going to be the case on that side of the ball. And then on the other side of the ball, you know, right now they have two healthy running backs, and one of them happens to have 13 overall touchdowns in James Conner. He is a punishing runner, a tackle breaker. He's intense. He's a spirited guy that they feed off of a little bit. And then you got all these weapons offensively. The Zach Ertz acquisition balances them out significantly. He's a threat. You know, when you're talking about A.J. Green, yeah, he's an 11th year, 33 years old, and he's your third or fourth option on the offense in terms of receivers. It is going to be a challenge to cover every blade of grass in this game.
So, Jeff,
you're going to have to find a way, though.
If the Bears are able to run the football, as you said, and they lean on their offensive line, mm-hmm. Are we going to see Tevin Jenkins, and if we do, in what capacity?
I would have a hard time thinking that's going to happen, but I don't know. I have not talked to Coach yet. I have not seen practice, obviously, so I have no idea. I would suspect not. They still have until the 6th to make that decision, you know, but at the same time, nothing would surprise me anymore. So I don't know. I really don't know where he's at.
Yeah, I'd play him on special teams. I said that to David. You know, put him on a kick team or something. Just get him out there and see what it looks like.
Yeah, I'd have a hard time, Mike. I don't even know how many padded practices they've had, or I mean, he's been in to even throw him out there in a game situation. I know sometimes you just gotta, you know, what do they say? You know, when your babies, you just throw them in the water, and if they figure out a way to float, I don't want to do that with this guy right now.
We never did that with our kids, Jeff.
No, yeah. And I still don't know how to swim. So there you go. I'm able to stay above water for just a small amount of time.
You're not a swimmer?
Never took. Oh. No, I have not figured that out yet in my tender age.
How do you stay in such great shape then?
Yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah, no, I'm not in great shape right now. The season's taking its toll. But hey, I can stay above water. I just don't know how to do the whole breathing thing. My kids make fun of me to this day about that. Believe me.
I can see you with like those floaties. Kid flow. Yeah.
Listen, this is a true story, and I'm going to really – this is a true story. This is a true story, okay? I'm going to embarrass myself, but long time ago, I rolled up my sleeves, and I'm talking – I'm an adult married man at the time, and I roll up my sleeves, and I go to the – well, maybe I wasn't married yet. No, I was not married because it was in Park Ridge at the YMCA, and I decide I'm going to learn how to swim. And so they put me in Guppies. The name of the class was Guppies, and I was with a bunch of older women learning how to swim, and I looked at myself. I looked around. I'm checking myself. I said, this is quite the embarrassment. I'm out of here. I'm done. So I never learned.
Aren't you? It's fun to stay there, by the way.
What?
The YMCA.
Aren't you the voice of the Bears?
True story.
How many people
no,
ask you
I wasn't
that?
At that time.
No? Okay.
No. Anyway.
Were you doing any window
work? I feel like I'm Joe Fortenbaugh right now telling everybody what he's looking like
exactly.
The first thing in the morning out of bed. This is very revealing. You guys are really getting a lot out of us.
That's great stuff, though, Jeff. That's great insight.
Yeah, that is hilarious.
All right. So speaking of getting in-depth in insight, where are the Bears mentally, do you think, going into Sunday's game, Jeff?
They're good.
You think they're in a good spot after everything that's happened?
Honestly, it's like you just flushed it. And, you know, it's just you could tell. You could tell by their attitudes. You could tell who's going to the podium and how they're talking. You know, you ride with it for however long the feeling lasts. You know, and the idea that you're still got something to play for as a team. You know, the shame of it all. You know what the shame of it is, really? You know, because when the season starts, and I've said this the last couple years, 19 and 20, if the Stars play to being Stars on defense, the defense is going to be really good, right? That's your thought process. But the Stars aren't there. But there's a star that has blossomed once again, and that is Robert Quinn. And the way he's playing, not just rushing the passer, Sean Desai indicated yesterday, when you watch him on tape and what he's doing, his explosiveness, everything's back and rolling for this guy. He's delivering right now. And if he was playing that way with a Mac that you know you're going to get every week and Akeem Hicks and Roquan was able to stay healthy, Eddie Jackson played a whole season after some early struggles. Oh, my. I mean, maybe things look a lot different and teams are, you know, even having a more difficult time against the Bears because there are times when teams, you know, they're 4-1 when they score, when they keep the opposition to less than 20 points. Otherwise, they're 0-6. So, you know, they do have a lot on defense to work with. And Sean Desai is actually doing a very nice job with putting guys in a position to succeed when they get the opportunity in most cases. So it's just how long can you weather the storm and can you continue to stop the run? That's another part of this. But isn't it a bit of a shame?
No question.
And every team deals with it.
Yep.
Every team deals with it.
And I think, you know, it was really interesting to me. One of the things that he said the other day, yesterday, I guess, Desai, was about Kendall Vildor. He basically said that the plan was to get him to play and then it just, you know, the game changes and things change as your game's going on. I think that's a really difficult thing to kind of, you know, get together in terms of if you have a player that you've benched and you want to kind of work them in, it's just a difficult thing in the course of a game to rely on being able to get that done. And I don't know what that means about Kendall Vildor, and I don't know that you felt that his replacement was particularly good, you know, had a bad moment and got his act together. But that's a weird one to me because I don't know how that's going to end up this season.
Well, you know, at least you're not burying the guy. He's a young player that they still – I mean, if he's still here, if he's still on the roster, they still believe in him. That there's something about his game that they like and they want to nurture and figure out. But I do credit Sean Desai for just not completely – you know how many coaches have come through that have just turned their – I can't coach that guy. I can't play for me. Done. You know, maybe a step back will make a difference for a guy who was a fifth-round pick from Georgia Southern. And, you know, they do like his tenacity. They do like his attitude. The guy works his tail off, fellas. He's a bright guy in his iPad. He's He understands things, and he's just had a stretch where he's facing some great quarterbacks, future Hall of Fame quarterbacks, in just his second season. And, you know, he's dipping his toe in the water here, and it's finding out it's not and that's so simple. But I'm okay with, you know, they don't have a ton of DBs here to, right. You know, right now anyway, in this particular team, to just give up on guys. So I'm okay with that. And I was actually glad to see Artie Burns in there. He's got the first-round pedigree. Didn't work out in Pittsburgh at the end. Didn't get a lot of playing time there, and, you know, he's thrown into the mix, and I would have tacked him too, like Detroit did on that early season, early series in the game. And he rallied, though.
He made a
couple of nice plays, and maybe his confidence is going to start zooming again and find his place in this thing.
Jeff, before we let you go quickly, I thought Eddie Jackson handled himself pretty well in talking about the fire Nagy chance, and I thought it showed some growth in him, because a couple years ago when he talked about being booed, he didn't come across so well, and I don't know that he came across as well as he did in talking about how, yeah, he balanced it well in talking about those chants. It's going to happen again Sunday, though. You figure that. Is that going to be a factor?
Well, hopefully, you know, I guess selective listening is part of the process. Are they waiting to hear it? Because they probably will as players. I often have talked to players. They say they don't hear even the cheers sometimes. It's just kind of background noise. Given what they experienced last year with no fans in the stands, I think everything's a little more, you're feeling it a little more no matter what you're hearing. So I don't know. I mean, I'm going to give it to the players to be mentally tough to deal with whatever goes on. But, yeah, I mean, there's always the potential of things getting really ugly at Soldier Field. We've seen it happen before.
Jeff, God bless you. Look forward
Likewise,
to the game,
boys.
Buddy. Thank you.
All right, Dave, we'll see you on Sunday.
We'll see you Sunday, Jeff.
Mike, have a good show this weekend.
All right, buddy. Thank you. That
see
is
you
Jeff Joniak. He is the voice of the Bears. We're going to switch gears a little. We're going to bring in Tom Lemming. We're going to talk to him about some of these college changes, about the impact on recruiting at the high school level. And we'll ask him about Marcus Freeman, who we covered and wrote a hell of a scouting report on. Boy, you want to talk about prescient.
Yeah. Tom knows Notre Dame as well as anybody in the industry.
No question about it. We'll speak to him next. It's Mully and Haw on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
It's about the right candidate. And when we find the person we think is the right one to lead this program and have the right conversations with him, that's all that matters. If that happens tomorrow or weeks from now, that's fine. This is about getting the right person.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That's the voice of Jack Swarbrick, the director of athletics, I guess. I don't want to call him the athletic director at Notre Dame, and he's talking about the search for a coach earlier in this week. Obviously, the search is over. And Marcus Freeman has been promoted to the head coaching job. And we are delighted to welcome in Tom Lemming. Tom, of course, college football recruiting analyst, co-host of the Lemming Report on CBS Sports Network, the Prep Football Report magazine, editor and founder. And always a joy to talk to Tom. He joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas hotline, home of the world's largest sports book. Tom, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great.
You know, I really have been anxious to get an answer to this question, which is, how does the Brian Kelly departure work in terms of recruiting? And how does Marcus Freeman, and I know it just happened, but he seems to be a very energetic and likable young man. How does that influence the team? I mean, it seems as if the recruiting portal and the transfer portal and the recruiting stuff is what all this is about, why coaches are leaving in the time they are, the December 16th date, and how does that impact all the players around the country?
Well, it impacts greatly, and this is a win-win for Notre Dame. Had they not hired Marcus Freeman, they would have had gone back to square one and really, I think, suffer the next couple of years. They brought him in. You know, he was the top defensive coordinator in the country last year, voted, won the award, and he's an elite coordinator, but also an elite recruiter, something that Notre Dame has not had for 30 years since Vinny Serrato left. And they've had coaches in the past that are good coaches. Brian Kelly's a good, solid coach, but he's not an elite recruiter. And they needed somebody like this. And Notre Dame fans are happy to win 10 games every year, but they're not happy that they haven't won a national title since 1988. And I do think that bringing in an elite recruiter, you'll see Notre Dame's fortune rise exponentially right now. And I think because of Marcus's ability. The key, and a lot of people have always said that Notre Dame, nowadays with their academic standards, will not win a national title. That's really a nonsense. They can recruit 75 of the top 100 players nationally. It always came down to lack of effort. Notre Dame let itself, said the school's going to sell itself. But the great Taylor Bell one time in the Sun-Times did a story on the top 100 players in the country, and over half of them had no idea Notre Dame was even in Indiana. So they have to sell. And what they're going to do with Marcus Freeman, he's going to sell. He's going to bring in elite defensive players starting in 2 weeks. I think the key for them winning a national title is their offensive coordinator, Tommy Rees. I know he felt, at least according to writers, he was restrained by Brian Kelly being an offensive coordinator. Now he's got complete control of the offense. That means he's got to go out and bring in an elite quarterback. And if they get that, they're going to win a national title in the next 3-4 years.
Tom, it was 2003 when you were doing what you do every year so well, the Prep Football Report, and Marcus Freeman was a high school linebacker at Wayne High School in Huber Heights, Ohio. He was a five-star recruit. You wrote about him, and you noticed that he had some unique leadership abilities. What do you remember about that report and what you saw in Marcus Freeman then compared to what you're seeing now as the head football coach at Notre Dame?
Well, Dave, you know, I went and saw him when he was during his junior season in Dayton, which is Huber Heights, is a suburb of. And then I invited him down to the U.S. Army Combine, where I saw him down there. And other ball players kind of gravitated towards him as a 17-year-old, which was unbelievable. And then he looked great in our Army game for the whole week. He was one of the team leaders that January of 2004. And I knew he was going to be something. You know, he was a five-star linebacker, so you knew he was going to be playing in the NFL. He's going to Ohio State. And then I really kind of lost track of him until he got to Cincinnati a few years ago. And again, it was no surprise to me. Marcus has got that oomph, that kind of thing that ball players gravitate towards. And that's why he's such an elite recruiter. Notre Dame is always, and Dave, you know, covering them in the past, that recruiting-wise, they bring in a Jalen Smith or a Manti Te'o, but never enough impact guys to beat Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, Georgia, schools like that. But he's got that ability now. This class coming in that was going to be destroyed if he wasn't hired because he was going to leave. Kelly's already gone. Signing day is the 15th. They were going to lose the majority of these players. Now they're going to keep the majority of them. Their 2023 class looks like an elite one already, and that's because of Marcus Freeman. And like I said, the key is Tommy Rees now taking charge of the offense and bringing in elite players to match Marcus Freeman's defensive players. And if he does that, they're going to win a national title. There's no doubt about that. They just need an elite quarterback. They've got a quarterback now who's somewhat slow-footed, and if he plays Alabama and Georgia, that'll be obvious to everyone. But I do think that they bring in a guy with the extraordinary athletic ability. Say you have a Joe Burrow or somebody who won for LSU that way. Notre Dame will win a title in 3-4 years. They're definitely starting to bring in that kind of talent.
So, you know, that's a wonderful thing, but how do you get that guy? When you say it's Tommy Rees, is that him? And, I mean, Tommy's a young man. He's 28, 29, and obviously you got Marcus Freeman's 35. I mean, you've got youth and energy on your side. You've got guys that can actually be hands-on, but how do you get guys? How do you make that connection? And you know, can Tommy become an elite recruiter just by working with Marcus Freeman?
Yeah, he wasn't before Marcus, but I do think he's young enough to learn because I do think that it's all on his shoulders. Marcus will bring in the defensive talent, but like next year, the 2023 class, there's three elite quarterbacks led by Arch Manning. I just filmed with Arch Manning down in New Orleans. He's definitely one of the guys that can lead him to a title. Then there's another guy, Malachi Nelson, who when I saw him late April, early May, I talked to him. His dad brought up the fact that they liked Notre Dame, but Notre Dame hadn't even talked to him yet. So I had mentioned that to one of the coaches there. They called him, offered him in May, but Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma had been talking to him for a year and a half ahead of Notre Dame. and he chose to go to Oklahoma, and now he's going to USC to follow Lincoln Riley there. And the third guy is Dante Moore, the guy that Notre Dame is zooming in on. He's from Martin Luther King High School in Detroit, very elite athlete. He's got a great arm that has to be kind of corralled, but he's got the running ability and the instincts to be that kind of quarterback. So most of it will be falling on Tommy Reese's shoulders, who I think felt restrained under Brian Kelly, who himself was an offensive coordinator. Now that he's got complete control of the offense, it might be good that they bring in a quarterback coach like a lot of schools, like Nick Saban's done, offensive coordinator and a quarterback coach that work hand in hand. One guy just develops the quarterback. The other guy runs the entire offense. It takes away pressure from Tommy Reese. That'd be a smart move by Marcus Freeman.
Tom, recruiting is all about potential, and so is coaching. So when we talk about floors and ceilings, why do you think, if you think this, and I sense that you might, why is Notre Dame's ceiling higher with Marcus Freeman, even though its floor might have been higher with Brian Kelly? But the change gives you the capacity and maybe the potential to do something even greater.
That's absolutely true, Dave, and that's the key. Brian Kelly, I've said this not as a joke, but I said it on my show for years. Show me a coach who's a golfer, and I'll show you a lousy recruiter, because your hobby has to be recruiting nowadays. Nick Saban set the tone. So did Urban Meyer. So did James Franklin when they're all in the Southeast Conference. Now Franklin's up in Penn State. Urban brought it to the Big Ten also, that kind of mentality that recruiting is 24 hours a day and 365 days a year. Brian Kelly was not like that. He was good in the house, but the problem is getting him into the house. And Notre Dame, I think golf has killed Notre Dame over the years. Lou Holtz was a golfer, and once Vinny Serrato left for the NFL, you saw after the 93 class left, the 90 class left in 93, you saw a major drop-off in talent for Lou Holtz. He got pushed out. Tyrone Willingham was a golfer enough to where he's teaching golf now, and he did not like to recruit. Brian Kelly's a golfer, did not like to recruit, at least on the level of a Nick Saban or all the Southeast Conference coaches, and now half the Big Ten is doing it. So Marcus Freeman understands that. He's going to be doing it, and I think that's the answer to your question. He is an elite recruiter, and he will be – now that he's the head man, he doesn't have to answer to anyone. He's going to be bringing in those type of athletes that Notre Dame fans will be really excited to see. But on the offensive side of the ball, it's up to Tommy Reese to follow that.
So I guess when I think about the national signing date and all that, does this need to shift or change? Will there be a push for that after what happened with Lincoln Riley and Brian Kelly? And, you know, as great as Marcus Freeman may be, maybe Notre Dame wanted to wait, but they couldn't wait till January, whatever.
Yeah, that's a good question. That's absolutely true. However, there are two signing days, so ball players that feel a little bit antsy about maybe jumping at Notre Dame on December 15th, they have a second chance on the first Wednesday in February to do it again. So they don't have to sign in December. The majority of them, I would say 80 to 90% sign in December. But the other ones that are have second thoughts about different things can wait until the first Wednesday in February. So they do have a backup plan for that. And a good number of ballplayers, when there are coaching changes, and there are every year at this time of the year, those ballplayers will wait until February.
Tom, before we let you go, I have to ask you this. What's the impact in terms of recruiting in the Big Ten on Michigan beating Ohio State finally? And does Jim Harbaugh, is he facing questions about potentially...
Is he a golfer?
Is he a golfer or jumping to the NFL? Not that Chicago might have an opening or anything, but does he have to face those kind of questions as he recruits?
I don't think anymore. I think he's on a football high right now. No, he's not a prolific golfer. He likes recruiting. Problem is, a lot of times I notice him out in the East. There's an enormous amount of talent when I'm out in New England, but they started bringing in a lot of guys from there that haven't panned out. But I do think that he puts a lot of effort into recruiting, just a little different type of recruiting. He doesn't go after the elite players that Ohio State, Notre Dame, or Penn State go after a lot of the times. And right now, I think, he's on a recruiting high. He's going to be able to land some big-time ball players next year, because beating Ohio State around Thanksgiving means that the recruiting for 2022 is all done. So you got to wait for the next year's class to go after, and you'll see Michigan rise. They're already having a decent year, but next year they'll have an outstanding year.
Tom, great stuff. Really appreciate your time. Really appreciate the insights.
Thanks, Tom. Great talking.
Same here, guys. Take care.
That is Tom Lemming. That is interesting stuff all the way around.
Golf killed Notre Dame. That stands out in what he said. And he had examples. And nobody follows this closer than he does.
Oh, I know.
It's a fascinating thing to consider when you think about the commitment to recruiting and what, you know, it's still, we talk about the NFL all the time. It's about players.
Yeah.
It's a players league.
No question.
And college football, if you get elite talent, no matter how your coach, how good they are on Saturday, it's all about having depth and talent and ability.
All right. 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station. This week, Mully and Haw got you ready for the Bears' Week 13 matchup against the Cardinals with expert analysis from Odyssey Sports NFL insider Michael Lombardi.
This year, teams coming off byes haven't looked very good. I mean, the Rams coming off a bye last week going up to Green Bay, I thought they would play really well. I thought their defense would step up. It was the opposite. I do think the way teams are given the whole week off, the teams, that kind of you lose your edge a little bit. But, I mean, Arizona, if they get Murray back, and he should be, I mean, give Jay Glazer credit. When this happened a month ago, he said this could be a 3 to 5 week injury, and everybody said it was only a 1 week injury, and it's proved to be correct. So, you know, I mean, they've got to get him back on the field, and they're healthier in their offensive line. Hopkins sounds like he's going to play. I mean, I think this is a really good team. And defensively, they're fast. They're athletic. They put a lot of pressure on the quarterback. Even though they've lost J.J. Watt, they've been very good. Chandler Jones will be a huge problem for the Bears to block on Sunday.
NFL Network correspondent Stacey Dales.
If you want to save jobs, you have to win. And so the Bears will be put to the task. Unfortunately, they're just so darned injured that it's going to be hard. I mean, their defense is decimated, and it's not just their most productive players. It is their best leaders. Roquan Smith is a big deal. He is one of the best linebackers in the entire league. And this Arizona team, I mean, when you think about top five, just to start with them this week, top five offensively and defensively, their pass rush is extraordinary. You know, they simply get home, and they bring a lot of pressure. So they win on first and second down defensively, and then they make those third downs really manageable, one of the best in the league. And I don't think Justin Fields returning this week is I have in my crystal ball because of that. You know, he's dealing with the cracked ribs. And Andy Dalton proved to be very serviceable against Detroit. I mean, over 300 pass yards. But the Bears have to win, very, you know, putting it bluntly. And it's hard kind of, you know, you look at this team and where do the storylines go from here? I find it quite remarkable that so many defensive veteran players are injured or on IR. That is a little perplexing to me, and I'll just kind of leave it there, I guess.
Daily Wager host Joe Fortenbaugh.
Line was sitting at 8 this morning and has dipped back down to 7.5, so a little bit of money here on Chicago. One thing to keep in mind with this Arizona team, Murray looks to be healthy, 2 weeks to get ready. On the road this season, they've been an absolute freight train. 6-0 straight up, 6-0 against the spread. But here's the key, boys. They're beating the point spread by 18 points per game. They're not winning by 18 points per game. They're beating the point spread by 18 points per game. So it's a tall order for Chicago this weekend, but the Bears get 10 days to get ready. And if you can find a way to get past this defense, you might be able to put something on the board. But I've been looking at that. I did see it was early Arizona money getting it up to 8, and then we saw some Bears money come in that knocked it back down to 7.5 last night.
Bears radio play-by-play man, Jeff Joniak.
It's tough to score on these guys, and here's that haunting number again, the number 16. In their 6 road wins, that's what the defense has given up for Arizona, 16 points a game. So you're not getting in a shootout with these guys. They like to start real fast. They've averaged 15 points or more, I guess, on average, in the first half of games, so they get to you quick. They do like to control the clock as well, so you kind of have to wrestle that time of possession thing, be efficient, but you got to get touchdowns. You've got 17 offensive touchdowns in 11 games and 2 return touchdowns from Roquan Smith and DHC on special teams. So it's not leaning in your favor to score touchdowns, but if you're going to control the clock, they have to end in points.
And the Chicago Tribune's Brad Biggs.
We're looking at a Cardinals team that, guys, they're number 4 in the league against the pass, and they're number 4 in opponents' yards per attempt. And to me, it's pretty remarkable that they're 4th in both of those categories when they've been able to win some games by some huge margins. when you've got a 17-point lead in the fourth quarter and your passing stats still look great, that's when it's really impressive, because the teams they're playing are forced to throw and try to play catch-up against them, and they can't even pile up stats that look okay. So that's concerning. Also concerning to me for the Bears is that when Arizona has gone on the road this year, guys, and we talked about it earlier in the week, they're unbeaten away from Glendale, Arizona. They've scored 38, 31, 37, 37, 31, and 23 points. Bears can't play in a game like that, as you guys know. So I've got Arizona 28, Bears 17.
Can the Bears win two in a row? Mully, Haw, and your reaction to Bears Cardinals Monday morning starting at 5 a.m.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score. Great hustle there, Ray.
Nice job, Ray. That.
Excellent.
Great work.
Yeah, and boy, I got to tell you, David, it's sobering when you think that all of us are picking the Bears to lose.
It is. We both said 27-17. Consider they've only scored 17 touchdowns in 11 games. That is remarkable futility, and that gives you very little confidence that anything is going to change on Sunday. You know, Mully, last night we talked about the Bulls beating the Knicks. I watched the Hawks winning the shootout. The Cubs signed Marcus Stroman. This has been a fun week in Chicago sports, and someone tweeted back at me last night, is like, can you guys maybe not talk about the Bears tomorrow morning and ruin everything? Because that's the kind of mood to put some people in, and we get it, because you look ahead and you want to find a pathway to success and victory, and you want to be optimistic about something that may change, and yet here comes the best team in the NFC into Soldier Field, and it's just very hard to see the Bears coming out of this game feeling very good about anything.
Yeah, I mean, here's the problem with the Bears. Bottom line, they are a beaten-up football team. They are without too many of their primary players to be considered. You know, this idea that somehow beating Detroit is going to fuel the winning streak that is going to save the season and jobs and careers and all the rest of it. You know, maybe I'd be on board with that if you had Khalil Mack, if you had, a Roquan Smith healthy and you weren't worried about him missing the game, if you felt that Akeem was able to play, if you felt that you had a solution at the cornerback position. I think what we have are a lot of guys, we've talked about it, you have people forced on the field. Now, you had 10 days off.
Right.
But like the last time, the Bears had a bye week. Doesn't seem to have healed anyone. I mean, the Bears came off the bye week and immediately put Khalil Mack on injured reserve.
Yeah, I know.
That's a heartbreaker.
And now, you know, Allen Robinson and Akeem Hicks aren't available.
Right.
And I understand what you're saying, and it's a very good point that people should respect, with Roquan Smith being the latest. I also believe this. I think that these injuries, which are very, you know, inexplicable, understandable, expected, I don't know how you want to frame it, but these injuries also provide too easy of a crutch. That I think that if the Bears were healthy, I don't have a ton of confidence that they would get the most out of this roster. I don't think it's a very complete roster, which is Ryan Pace's problem, and I'm not sure the coaching staff could get the most out of it, which is Matt Nagy's problem. So I think that, yeah, the injuries are something you take into account, but even healthy, I think we would be talking about a Bears team that would be very dissatisfying.
I am not arguing with that, but I like that you said it, because I think that you're building up all the reasons. You know, you're building – when this goes – when it does come off the rails – that's going to be...
I'm anticipating the excuses.
Yeah, well, okay. I mean, because we heard them last year.
We heard them last year, and I don't want to hear them again.
We heard about the pandemic and about the character of the team and how everybody in the league wanted to be the Bears.
It's a preemptive thing.
Did they have the quarterback right?
No.
Did they win enough games? No.
No.
But other than that...
Other than that,
quarterback situation completely right? No. Have we won enough games? No. Everything else is there.
Well, with Ted and George, when they evaluate this season, Mully, I guess I don't think the overriding factor, I don't think the most influential thing can be that they were injured. And that's what kept them from getting to the playoffs or making a run, because I don't see it that way. I really just don't. I think even healthy, this team would have limitations, whether in terms of talent, depth, or coaching.
We have a texter checking in. Let him have the final word. He says, isn't it interesting how Sean Payton looks without a quarterback? He didn't look too good, and obviously they lost their quarterback. He retired after God knows how many years and dominant years, and that team is going nowhere. And their quarterback got hurt, so maybe there's some promise there, but it's a knee injury, and it's a full year recovery for most humans. Maybe a couple-year recovery if you're Tariq Cohen.
Maybe the Saints should fire Sean Payton and put him on the marketplace, and maybe if there were a team looking for a head coach to make an impact, that they would be inclined to interview him.
Maybe Ryan Pace would stick around just to play barista.
I didn't say that.
That's what you're implying.
That's your idea.
I don't know why you brought that up. Let's a lot of fun this week, a lot of great stories. We're going to talk to Dan and Layla about it all next. Molly and Hall on the Score.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.